This is Morning Edition on Vermont Public Radio. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Good morning. Vermont's federal court judge William Sessions announced earlier this month that he will be shifting to senior status, an announcement that prompted Vermont's senior senator Patrick Leahy to call Sessions one of the most respected federal judges in the country. Judge Sessions has served in Vermont since 1995, but was well acquainted with the state before then, having graduated from Middlebury College. We are pleased to have Judge William Sessions joining us now in our VPR studios in Colchester. Judge Sessions, thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, thanks very much, Mitch.
Shifting to senior status, does that essentially mean you'll be moving to a part-time role?
Well, it could eventually. I've decided that I would like to continue with a full caseload, so in fact I will. I mean, I'll be taking just a smaller number of cases because there are three judges rather than two. But at least for the foreseeable future, I'm going to continue on with a full caseload.
Why did you want to make this move to senior status?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons. Most of them are my four grandchildren. I hope to be engaged in a little bit more grandfatherly activities. It also provides an open door to being judges in other parts of the country. I do actually sit in California occasionally. In February, I'm sitting on the Ninth Circuit in California, and I sit on the Court of Appeals in New York. But as a senior judge, you are able to go most places in the country to help out when needed.
Now, you've overseen many cases. We can't talk about all of them here because some are pending, but at least one that had a far-reaching impact, not just for Vermont, but really for the whole country, is the case where you ruled in favor of Vermont and the state of New York, as well as environmental groups like the Sierra Club, to mandate tighter emission standards on automobiles. Can you speak about why you ruled the way you did on that case?
Well, it was a fascinating case. It actually was based upon an interpretation of the regulations passed by California, which were then adopted by Vermont and other states. The attack was raised by the car companies that these regulations were so strict that it would inhibit their progress. And I looked specifically into their arguments, in particular trying to figure out whether the emissions were justified and also whether they would provide an undue impediment to the car industry, and found that the regulations were scientifically and economically justified.
Now, do you feel that was the biggest ruling in your career to this point? If you had to, you know, put a quantifier on it.
I'm not so sure it was. I actually had a case which involved campaign finance, which ultimately went to the Supreme Court. I've just passed on a case which has been resolved, so I can't talk about it, on equal pay for women. Usually, I'll get one, two, or three significant cases a year which may have national import, and the car emissions case was just one of those.
Can you talk about the campaign finance decision a little bit, the one that did get to the Supreme Court?
The Vermont legislature a number of years ago passed a law which, first of all, controlled campaign contributions, but also campaign expenditures. It was the first state really to say that campaign expenditures should be restricted. That is, how much a person can actually spend. In fact, there was a U.S. Supreme Court case which said that you cannot control campaign expenditures because it's a violation of the First Amendment. I essentially found that the efforts to limit campaign expenditures were unconstitutional, although I suggested that they may very well be justified, and perhaps the Supreme Court should look again. But I also upheld the contribution limits that the Vermont legislature imposed on state positions.
You've also served on the U.S. Sentencing Commission. The group was created to address some of the disparities in sentencing. Most people, I think, when they think of that, they connect that in their minds to drug crimes, and we'll get to that in a moment. But the commission was also charged with looking at how different sentences in different parts of the country for similar crimes were different. How bad was the problem?
Well, actually, it was established in 1987, and it was established out of a study which indicated that if you were charged as a defendant with a particular crime in one part of the country, you are very likely to receive a different sentence than if you were charged with the same offense under the same circumstances in a different part of the country. And as a result, Congress decided to establish a sentencing commission which set policies for implementation of criminal sentences. I was appointed in 1999 by President Clinton. Then I was reappointed by President Bush. And then when President Obama took office, I was nominated to become the chair of the Sentencing Commission. And after some period of review,
that took a little while,
right? I was confirmed.
What about that that pause there? Now, you know, a lot of people have speculated that this was political payback, if you will, for Judge Sonia Sotomayor being approved, and that when President Obama nominated your name, this was a Republican pushback. Can you give us any thoughts on that?
I have no idea what was behind the delay. It was about 6 months. The Sentencing Commission is a fairly controversial body in Washington. We have a lot of contact with members of Congress. What was behind their thinking was unclear to me, but ultimately, when I came up for a vote for chair of the commission, I received a unanimous vote.
One of the things the commission did is change the mandatory minimums for sentencing on drug crimes for things like crack cocaine. I think it's fairly well known now that, especially in the 1980s, a lot of white people who were convicted for, let's say, cocaine possession were given much lighter sentences than many black people were for having an equal amount of crack cocaine. The end of the mandatory minimums meant that many people had their sentences reduced. Do you think, though, that the goal of a more equitable sentencing system has been achieved since your time on that commission and working specifically on that problem?
Well, we've made great progress in crack cocaine. This disparity was having an enormous impact on the African-American community. So what the commission did, this is what I'm most proud of, frankly, in 2004, we decided to, on our own, reduce the penalties for crack cocaine. And then we applied the changes retroactively to those persons who were already in prison. And as a result, approximately 20,000 defendants in prison received reduced sentences, about 3 years each. Many of them were released immediately. We then followed those individuals to see if their recidivism rates were higher, and they were not any higher than anyone else. That led the push to change the mandatory minimums. And when I was chair, finally Congress passed changes in mandatory minimum sentences to reduce the disparity between crack cocaine and powder cocaine. It eventually was passed. The president signed it, and the reduction has been significant.
Do you think that there is a way to be completely objective in your job and the career that you have chosen? Because when people think of the law, they think of the letter of the law. That's what you're charged to do. You follow the law as close as you can, and you're trying to, you know, be an objective, nonpartisan person. But is that possible? Is it something that you strive for?
It's very, very difficult to be totally objective. In the process of sentencing a human being, one looks at that human being and makes an objective assessment of what that person did. But then when you begin to interpret reasons why the offense was committed, factors that may take a role in deciding what is the just sentence, one, needless to say, thinks about one's own experience and makes that kind of assessment. When you're looking at a constitutional issue, on the one hand, you are making an objective assessment of what the law is, but the law is a continuing moving target. It's going in directions. And to what extent do you try to figure out where is the law headed? And by doing that, subjective elements become very much a part of your decision.
What has Vermont meant to you in your career?
Oh, this is my home. It was a wonderful place to practice law. People in Vermont treat each other respectfully. And as a result, I have tried as best I can over the 18 or 19 years I've been a judge to apply that kind of approach to the law in the courtroom. So we try as best we can to perform in the court the way people perform in Vermont. You treat people respectfully. You treat people honestly. The level of dissension or conflict, hopefully, is reduced substantially. This is all because we live in a state, I think, which honors respecting others.
Judge William Sessions, thank you so much for coming in to speak with us.
I appreciate it. Thank you.